ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय मैत्रेय उवाच निशम्य वैकुन्तनयोज मुक्ययोर् मधुच्युतं वाचम् अरुक्रमप्रियः कृताभिषेक कृतनित्यमङ्गलो मुनीं प्रणाम्य शिष्यम् अव्यवादयत् निशम्य वैकुन्तनियोज मुक्ययोर् मधुच्युतं वाचम् अरुक्रमप्रियः कृताभिषेक कृतनित्यमङ्गलो मुनीं प्रणाम्याशिषम् अव्यवादयत् Maitreya Uvacha. The great sage Maitreya said, Nishamya, after hearing, Vaikuntha of the Lord, Niyodhya, associates, Mukhya Yoho, of the chief, Madhu Chutam, like pouring honey, Vacham, speeches, Urukrama Priyaha, Dhruva Maharaj, who was very dear to the Lord, Krita Abhishekaha, took his sacred bath, Krita, performed, Nitya Mangalaha, his daily spiritual duties, Munim, to the sages, Pranamya, having offered obeisances, Ashisham, blessings, Abhyavadayat, accepted. Translation, the great sage Maitreya continued, Maharaj Dhruva was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in the Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. Now, is this something that you would do if you had a Vaikuntha Vimana just come in for a landing and say, come on aboard, let's go. Hang on, guys, I'm going to do my... purport by Srila Prabhupada. We should mark how dutiful Dhruva Maharaj was in his devotional service even at the time he left this material world. He was constantly alert in the performance of devotional duties. Every devotee should take his bath early in the morning. We should remember this about, you know, when we're going back to Godhead, we should follow Dhruva Maharaj saying, hang on just a minute here. Every devotee should take his bath early in the morning and decorate his body with tilak. In Kali Yuga, one can hardly acquire gold or jeweled ornaments, but the 12 tilak marks on the body are sufficient. as auspicious decorations to purify the body. Since Dhruva Maharaj was living at that time at Bhadrika Ashrama, there were other great sages there. He did not become puffed up because the airplane sent by Lord Vishnu was waiting for him. As a humble Vaishnava, he accepted blessings from all the sages before riding on the plane brought by the chief of the Vaikuntha associates. I'm going to read the next verse also, text 29. Translation: before getting aboard, Dhruva Maharaj worshipped the airplane, circumambulated it, and also offered obeisances to the associates of Vishnu. In the meantime, he became as brilliant and illuminating as molten gold. He was thus completely prepared to board the transcendental plane. Purport: in the absolute world, the plane, the associates of Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu himself are all spiritual. There is no material contamination. In quality, everything there is one. As Lord Vishnu is worshipable, so also are his associates, his paraphernalia, his airplane, and his abode. For everything of Vishnu's is as good as Lord Vishnu. Dhruva Maharaj knew all this very well as a pure Vaishnav, and he offered his respects to the associates and to the plane before riding in it. But in the meantime, listen to this, his body changed into spiritual existence, and therefore it was illuminating like molten gold. In this way, he also became one with the other paraphernalia of Vishnu Loka. Paragraph: Mayavad philosophers cannot imagine how this oneness can be achieved even in different varieties. Their idea of oneness is that there is no variety. Therefore, they have become impersonalists. As Shishumara, Vishnu Loka, or Dhruva Loka are completely different from this material world, so a Vishnu temple within this world is also completely different from this material world. As soon as we are in a temple, we should know very well that we are situated differently from the material world. In the temple, Lord Vishnu, his throne, his room, and all other things associated with the temple are transcendental. The three modes, sattva, raja, and tamaguna, have no entrance into the temple. I hope you've noticed that. No modes allowed. We have a big sign in front of the door. Stay out. It is said, therefore, that to live in the forest is in the mode of goodness, to live in the city is in the mode of passion, and to live in a brother liquor shop or slaughterhouse is in the mode of ignorance. But to live in the temple means to live in Vaikuntha Loka. And we have a sign-up sheet waiting at the end of class for those who know. Everything in the temple is as worshipable as Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Okay. So Maitreya is continuing to speak. He's just finished the explanation of the Vaikuntha Vimana appearing, and the hearty invitation of the Vaikuntha residents that have been personally sent by Lord Vishnu to bring Dhruva to the spiritual realm. We heard about the Shishumara planet where Lord Vishnu resides within this material universe. There's an expansion of Mahavishnu within each universe as Garbhadakshai Vishnu. Sometimes this Shishumara planet is said to be the abode of, primarily it's said to be the abode of Shirodakshai Vishnu, with Garbhadakshai Vishnu residing on the causal ocean, the Garbhadak ocean. So this is the one within this universe, the one spiritual planet, that when this universe is destroyed, that planet isn't destroyed. It's eternal. And the beings there are eternal, and the Supreme Lord resides there. And pretty amazing, he's getting a personal invitation. Please come to my abode. Dhruva is such a devotee that he doesn't just like jump on board, say, let's go. It's interesting because his fastidiousness, his attentiveness, his dutifulness to his prescribed duties makes it sound like he's on a sadhana bhakti platform, and it's just kind of like rigid in his sadhana bhakti. In the Vaikuntha realm, the mood in Vaikuntha is that of awe and reverence. And in that mood of awe and reverence, as these two verses are describing, everything in relation to the Supreme Lord is treated with awe and reverence. So, supposing someone says, or Kishore Kishori say to you, come on. You know, the first thing that Dhruva Maharaj would do is what he did here. He made his body clean. You don't just jump on the altar. You make your body clean. And the Krita Abhisheka, this third line, and Krita Nitya Mangalo, the sacred duties that one performs in the mangala, in the auspicious hours of the day, he performed all of them as well. And he dressed himself appropriately in his proper attire and decorated himself with ornaments. Our ornaments are tilak, primarily kuntimala and tilak. So to come before, because you're going to be brought before the Lord, you have to be in that purified state. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's described that when Nimai Pandit was conducting his school, and if any of the students came to the class without their tilak, they got sent home immediately, because without tilak meant they had not done their puja that morning, because before performing your puja, you bathe and apply tilak and so many other duties and rituals, and then you perform your puja, and then your consciousness is qualified to come and study the Vedas, not before. So, similarly, the call of the Lord may come one day, and we need to be in a fit and purified condition. That's the message. The other part that's being presented is munin pranam yasisham. He was in Badrikashram, and there are many other sages. Doesn't say it directly in the verses, but the indication is implied in the purport. Not only Dhruva saw this Vaikuntha Vimana, but the other sages, they saw the Vaikuntha Vimana. And it's for Dhruva only. And they weren't going, oh, we're envious. And Dhruva wasn't thinking, yes, it's for me only. He's a Vaishnava, and so he's taking blessings. So why would somebody that's so elevated that Lord Vishnu sends a Vaikuntha Vimana and there's other persons present and he's asking for the blessings from those other persons that are present? In other words, he's in a superior position and they're in their not quite there yet position, but he's seeking their blessings. It's Vaishnava before some undertaking is taken up. Nice example is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami was requested to write Chaitanya Charitamrita, he took blessings from all the Vaishnavas before beginning. They took blessings from the Supreme Lord before beginning. Or another nice example is when Lokanath was instructed by Lord Chaitanya, I'm going to be taking sannyas very soon, and I want to go to Vrindavan. Please go to Vrindavan ahead of me, and I'll come shortly, and then you can have a nice place where we can be together in Vrindavan. So Lokanath went to all the Vaishnavas and sought their blessings. It's nice. It's very nice. The mode of seeking, if one is commencing something, to seek blessings from the devotees of the Lord for invoking auspiciousness, getting their blessings, so that one's undertaking or the activity will be successful. And he still didn't just jump on board. He saw the Vimana and paid his respects to the Vimana, circumambulating the Vimana and paying his respects to the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vaikunthavasis, or the persons who were taking charge of that mission. Then another curious thing, no detail is presented, but what Prabhupada writes, I'll read it again. While all these preparatory things are going on, cleansing, purifying, readying, in the meantime, his body changed into spiritual existence, which is a different explanation than the explanation with Narada. Narada was, he gave up his body, and like lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. It's not like thunder and lightning, but thunder and the sound of, you know, the flash of lightning and then the sound of the thunder. There's a little delay. But lightning and illumination, they're at the same time. at the speed of light at the same time. So then Narada left that body, the previous life's body, and ascended in his spiritual body. In this case, the description is that Dhruva, suddenly his body transformed. His body changed into spiritual existence. And therefore it was illuminating like molten gold. In this way he also became one with the other paraphernalia of Vishnu Loka. So he now has a spiritual body. Sometimes devotees get into like speculating. What's it like, Maharaj? How does it work? So we have these different explanations. That's all we can say from the knowledge of scripture, where due to absorption, complete absorption in devotional service, one's the body of a pure devotee is respected and treated like spiritual existence. So there's the spiritualized, and then here it's changed into spiritual existence. Radiant. Spiritual form. So in this spiritual form or spiritual realm, one of the important messages that we're hearing is all of those things that are of the same spiritual nature, they're to be treated in that way, just like the altar. Before it was an altar, it was a tree. Before it was a tree, it was earth. But by the process of its being carved and being used to be the throne of the deities, it then becomes worshipable. Or the paraphernalia, the incense holder and the bell and the conch shell and everything, all the deity paraphernalia, their cups for the water and their little shoes and everything, it's deity paraphernalia, and deity paraphernalia is worshipable because it's used directly in the service of the Lord. And then Prabhupada takes it and expands it to say the temple. I heard directly Prabhupada say it twice in New York, and I heard it on a recording, him saying it in Los Angeles. This temple is not in Brooklyn, or this temple is not in New York. It is Vaikuntha. So here we are. This is Vaikuntha. If our consciousness is connected to Krishna properly, it's Vaikuntha. I've repeated this before, but a reporter once asked Srila Prabhupada, your Hare Krishna movement, it's growing so rapidly. Who knows? The whole world might become Krishna conscious devotees. And what would happen then, Swamiji? And Prabhupada's reply was, don't worry, it won't happen. And then he said, but if it did happen, this place would become Vaikuntha. His eyes real big. So, what's the difference between this place and Vaikuntha? It's the consciousness of the individuals that reside. So the building can be, you know, before it was a Masonic lodge, and now it's a Hare Krishna temple. or in some places, a house becomes a temple. And the difference is that Krishna resides and presides, and as Prabhupada is saying here, there is his throne, and there is his paraphernalia, and there is his, it's his place, and his place is Vaikuntha. It's a little bit like Bhaktivinoda Thakur's description of the Holy Dham. And materialists can go to the Holy Dham, and they don't get a sense that it's a Holy Dham. It's like, for them, it's at best, it's a, you know, a tourist experience where they take their camera and take their pictures and tell somebody, I went here and saw this and did that. So what Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes is that for such persons, there's a veneer or a thin covering like oil on water. It spreads out very thin. And so when you look at the water's surface, you don't see the water, you see the oil on the water's surface. But just below the oil is the water. And similarly, just below what ordinary people see is the spiritual world. At least that's the very clear instruction we're receiving here. And if one is Krishna conscious, one doesn't just see the covering, one sees or experiences the non-difference of the place from the Supreme Lord. So then, similarly, the devotees of the Lord are connected to the Lord and so forth. One of the stories I remember hearing as a new devotee is when it was in Los Angeles, and somebody had come back from India. Going to India, the assignment was to bring a mridanga. The devotees didn't know what a mridanga was, so Prabhupada described what a mridanga was. So somebody brought one, and when they arrived, they very happily brought it to Prabhupada's quarters. And he immediately got from behind his desk and paid obeisances to the mridanga and took his uttariya, his outer garment, and covered the mridanga. He was instructing the devotees by example. But we respect its Balaram, paraphernalia of the Lord. So when we started making our own mridangas, the fiberglass ones, it was Balaram drums, because of the teaching that Prabhupada had given us. And if we're Krishna conscious, we treat with respect the paraphernalia, the temple, the altar of the deities, as well as the deities and the devotees. And by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can make, wherever we go, a place of pilgrimage by the performance of kirtan and so forth. It's a way of sanctifying this material world, sanctifying our consciousness, so that our consciousness is not worldly and the place becomes transformed. So just go back to the first comment. What Dhruva is not doing is he's attached to some ritual. And so before doing something, he's got to do some ritual. Rather, it's part of his ingrained part of his Krishna consciousness that this is something that's so revered and respected, I have to be fit to interact with this which is so spiritual and sacred. And by so doing, by carrying that consciousness, his body became fully spiritualized. Or his body changed into spiritual existence. And he also became part of the paraphernalia of the Supreme Lord. Nice concept. Now, how to make concept reality? How to be qualified like that ourselves, following Dhruva's example? Okay, so I'll end there, see if there's any questions or comments. Yes.
How when sinful and materialistic people travel to the Dham, they leave their sinful reactions there, and then when saintly people come to that place, then it's kind of relieved.
Kind of relieved.
I don't remember the exact wording that,
okay,
that Prabhupada, like the,
you fudged a little
bit. The burden is removed. So, how are we to understand that if the Dham is transcendental, that it can be somehow contaminated by the sins of materialistic people?
Well, it's the veneer. Have you been to Vrindavan? Let's go. People that are not devotees, or like really beginning devotees, when they go to Vrindavan, they see the hogs. They see the sewage running here and there, and they smell it too. And they see the dirt, and they see all those kinds of things. And they go, yuck, I want out of here. I've heard people that went to Vrindavan, I interacted with persons that went to Vrindavan, they weren't very spiritually elevated. They stopped practicing Krishna consciousness after that. Because there's the external, and the external keeps unqualified persons from entering. So it's not precisely that, you know, that the Dham becomes contaminated as much as there's a stockpile of rubble. And saintly persons visit such places and by the process of devotional service and their own purity, that impurity becomes burned. The impurity becomes removed. Something like that. The notion that's described in the Bhagavatam is that there's a hierarchy. The sacred river is capable of relieving persons of their sinful reactions. In hierarchy, the devotee of the Lord is even better. Their association of the devotee of the Lord, pure devotee of the Lord, is even better. Because by sound vibration, they can awaken the dormant Krishna consciousness, not just relieve one of the sinful reactions. So devotee, pure devotees, being present in the Dham or visiting the Dham, relieves the Dham of that burden. Anything else? Yes.
I don't know how to
Okay. Anyone else?
But I...
Maybe you can help me to phrase it. Or we hear this pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Sanatana Goswami and the boils on his body that he receives from drinking the water Jarikanda.
Yeah.
And in that section, this whole topic of spiritual body is discussed.
Yes.
And how Sanatana Goswami's body is spiritual, these are not due to sinful reactions, and so on and so on.
Right.
Your class is the answer to the question as such, but how to understand and how does one cultivate that vision of this reality? Because before, it appears that everything is just a combination of the modes of nature, and then I'm not able to phrase my question properly. But how to see that it's not just a combination of the modes, but this is spiritual energy, or is it transformed into spiritual energy? And
well, the how-to is by the process of hearing. Because without hearing, will we have even a clue about what's spiritual and what's material? I was just listening to a lecture yesterday, and somebody was asking Srila Prabhupada about dreams. And as the interaction went further, they were asking if dreams were spiritual. And, you know, Prabhupada was speaking very calmly and interactively with the person, but when they said that, he got, that's the mind, it's material. Dreams, the mind, and that's material. It's not spiritual. So, how we make a distinction between what's spiritual and what's material, except through hearing. They was giving the example of table. So because, you know, how do I know that this is table? I heard it from my father. Have my father know? He heard it from his father. So this is table. We understand it because we've heard it and received it in that way. So to understand properly what is spiritual depends upon the hearing process. Qualified speaker, qualified receiver of that message. And otherwise we won't know. We'll have some notion or another notion and keep changing notions, none of which are likely to be what the difference is between spiritual and material. So what's simple definition of spiritual is that which is in relation to the personality of Godhead. So because the body of Sanatana Goswami was fully utilized in the Lord Chaitanya's service, his body was spiritual. So those affectations that it showed due to drinking water, contaminated water, and got weeping sores on his body, not due to karma. How can a spiritual body have weeping, pus come out of openings of the body? It smells bad and yucky. But so the distinction is, it's not a karmic reaction of Sanatana Goswami. It was all rather part of a plan induced by the Lord so the whole Leela could be enacted. Bringing Sanatana Goswami to a point of absolute surrender and dependence upon Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And then, poof, the sores were gone. He embraced Sanatana Goswami, and what was that? You could say a miracle cure. But it's part of the Leela. Now, supposing it's, you or me or somebody, in our vicinity, and we start thinking, something, speculating, was that, something that happens to us? Was that spiritual? You know what I mean. You lost the microphone. It'll come back. Here it comes.
What is it, the word I'm looking for? Sent away by Duryodhan with the sharp words. And it's described how he can see both Mahamaya and Yogamaya working simultaneously. He can see Mahamaya working on Duryodhan to make him act in such a way. And he can see that Yogamaya was giving him opportunity to leave that place and go on pilgrimage for purifying his existence. So is it that when we become more Krishna conscious, is it something like that where you
see... Yeah, something like that. Same energy working differently based upon consciousness. So Krishna's expert. And one living entity and a living entity seeing the same thing differently. Not just because they're individual, but because one's Duryodhana and the other's Vidura. Their relationship with Krishna is different, and according to their relationship with Krishna, the energy of Krishna works differently. Same energy, same circumstance, works differently. Similarly, material world, spiritual world, or ordinary and spiritual existence. Like Prabhupada said, that when we become Krishna conscious, it's not that now we have four arms. Meaning, Vaikuntha. Where's your other arms, Prabhu? I can see that you're not spiritual.
I was hearing in the beginning of the lecture about Dhruva Maharaj, how dutiful he was to us. How dutiful Dhruva Maharaj was for towards devotional service.
Okay, got it. Thank you for... What's wrong with my hearing? Go ahead.
And yesterday at the morning lecture also, I was hearing that there are so many opportunities to do devotional service and how do we decide what to choose. And my concern was that I see that there are so many opportunities to render devotional service, but the eagerness to do that seems to be diminishing.
The eagerness seems to be...
diminishing.
Diminishing.
And so I wanted to know what...
Really?
Yes, Maharaj.
I don't see that. Maybe it's, you know, move from there to here and from here to the next place, but I don't see diminishing. You see that?
I feel I was more enthusiastic and I'm not anymore so eager.
Maybe she'd go back to Penn State. Take up another PhD program. And I'm not suggesting that. Don't listen. We've got to be careful here. There can be so many factors adjusting to new circumstances, etc., etc., etc. When you're feeling that feeling that says my enthusiasm is less, one thing for sure is back to basics. Not like try to reach for that feeling that I used to have, even if it was yesterday or 5 minutes ago. It's back to basics. You invest in the very careful hearing and chanting, and that's the basis of what sustaining enthusiasm is about, proper hearing and chanting. And if something goes up and then like disappears, then the basis and support was not sufficient. So go back to the basics. Strong program of hearing and chanting. For our very advanced Vaishnavas, they describe that their nourishment, their foodstuff, is hearing. It's what gives them strength. Here's another message that comes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur when he's describing the Utsaha Nischaya Dayayat sequence. When he's describing enthusiasm, something that he expresses towards the end of his commentary is that without a spiritual conception, there's no question of sustaining enthusiasm. Or say it in reverse. If enthusiasm is based upon a material conception, it will be, you know, present and then absent. Now you see it, now you don't. Enthusiasm and then no enthusiasm. Because it's propelled by or generated by something material. So that's not what real enthusiasm is. Real enthusiasm is, it's not propelled by something material. It's spiritual. It's propelled by the awakening of Krishna consciousness that comes from the hearing and chanting process. And through that hearing and chanting process, one receives mercy. And as one receives mercy, enthusiasm is naturally going to be there. Naturally. And it will sustain. One last comment is the unsteady stage or anishtata bhakti stage is something that one can get on the other side of when anarthas are nearly gone. So if there's unsteadiness, that tells you something about my impurities of heart nearly completely gone. And if they're not nearly completely gone, there'll be some unsteadiness. So, but still, the remedy is the same thing. You turn your attention to the basics, hearing and chanting, because that's what has removed whatever impurities have been removed and has given the enthusiasm, whatever enthusiasm is genuinely there, and keep doing that. Stay on course.
Maharaj, what is the strong program of hearing and chanting? What is strong? There is a...
Tivra. Tivra. That's a nice word. Tivrena bhakti yogena. You can look up the verse in the second canto Srimad Bhagavatam. Akama sarvakama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Tivra is strong. So I can repeat something I just said. One of the things that's strong is it's not circumstantial. It's not dependent upon circumstance. It's generated from the position that says, I want to take shelter of Krishna. I want a relationship with Krishna. It's not, well, if things are going this way, then I do, and things are going that way, I'm not sure I do. Not circumstantial, but something that's more fundamental or a awakened condition of the soul. Even if, in the first part of the verse is, even if one wants something material, sarvakama, or moksha kama, or akama, But in any, whatever the circumstance, tivra bhakti, so beyond circumstance, that's strong. I was discussing with one of the devotees yesterday about their appreciation for the sacrifice that the devotees who are connected to the temple and doing the deity worship, they have jobs, they have family, they have their sadhana, and yet, you know, every morning they're up at in time to be at Mangal Arati at 4:30, and then they go on the altar and do their deity worship and chant the rounds and go to their work, and there's no time for, you know, skipping a beat, but to speak of Maya. That's strong. And it's every day and every day and every day. That's strong. Every day. Not circumstantial. Oh, it's cold out. Or something. I don't feel like it today. It's tivra bhakti. And by so doing, everything that's desirable will come and everything that's undesirable will dissipate by that strong devotional practice. It's particularly the beginning stages that may be bumpy to get to that stage where it's strong. That's okay. Fixed. That was one of the ISKCON vernacular terms that we used in the beginning, taken from Srila Prabhupada. He used the phrase fixed up. So then we, you know, borrowed it and said, you know, this devotee is fixed up. Meant, you know, unwavering. Not depending upon which way how the mind feels or what things are going on around them or nothing circumstantial, just because of their strong determination, fixed desire to be engaged in Krishna service without deviation. Strong. Can you invite whoever's out in the hall to like close the door and, you know, keep their voice down a little bit? Thanks.
Sorry to be bugging you this morning, Maharaj. One question on the theme of Dhruva Maharaj offering his respects to the sages before boarding and having that deep respect for them even though his position is very exalted. A general question is how can one deepen one's respect for the Vaishnavas?
You ask this how-to question.
Yes, I'm sorry. I can think of better ways to phrase the Maharaj. I haven't thought of it right now, so I'm going to say whatever. Particularly, I've observed that the lack of respect or the tendency towards, you know, diminishing respect appears at the time of hearing from other devotees more than anything.
It appears at a time of
hearing from other devotees. Where, in other words, one may feel that I have respect for the Vaishnavas,
but
at the time of hearing, that I personally I've observed in myself and so on, that the tendency to that disrespect that may be there in the heart surfaces, where, oh, what do they have to say that's meaningful and so on. So I was wanting to understand how to not be fooled in thinking that my respect is so deep, because I see that at the time of hearing it's not so deep.
Okay. Well, it's, you know, keep practicing. That's how to. Think back when you were, you know, how far, I don't know how far back you want to go, but think back. I remember you describing to me once when you were in Manhattan and, you know, what that was like, what you did, and, you know, respect. What's that? Searching, maybe, but respect. And now you're wanting to deepen your respect. So I just say, keep going. Cultivate it. Because it's so foundational, so fundamental to having anything that's of a spiritual dimension, to having start with a relationship. How can you have a relationship with anybody without respect? Oh, without respect, it's impersonal. Respect? I'm God. Of course, you're God too, but... Anyway, how can you have a relationship without respect? So how can you receive or properly give, receive or give in a relationship without respect? If it's without respect, it's like, I'll tell you something, and don't tell me anything without respect. What's the relationship? There's no relationship. And we want relationships. So there must be respect. So build. And being a very personable individual, you know how to respect. But your statement is, I see there's a barrier. Okay, but so cultivate it. These how-to questions, I'll just repeat. When Prabhupada was asked, Swamiji, how can we be sincere? And his answer was, by being sincere. And then he said, everybody knows what sincerity is. Everybody knows what insincerity is. We know what sincerity is, and be sincere. And by being sincere, you become sincere. So by being respectful, I've recognized my limitations in being respectful or offering respect. Let me compensate by making a more diligent effort to be respectful. And, you know, one of the things that helps going in the right direction is it's right. There's light. There's joy. You know, it's self-confirming that, you know, and then another thing that happens is pride. I'm being respectful. And pride just destroys it. One of Maya's very special weapons is pride. So we strive, and something that helps us strive is the relationship of following an instruction to do so. Then it's not just me making an effort against the material energy. There's a relationship, and I'm reaching out for that relationship, and that gives me support. And I'm the servant of that person who has given me this nice relationship, this nice instruction. That's one of the ways to deepen the how-to, having those strong relationships that we're just the servant of in that relationship. Anything else? Jitendra, you have any wisdom you want to share with us this morning? Okay. Come on, it's a Bob Dylan song or something. Oh, I remember one. Now that you mention. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah.